Welcome to This Day in Pottery History, a series of brief observations, meditations, vignettes, and editorials about the backroads and byways of pottery history that helped shape the pottery world as we know it today, here on this very day in pottery history. I'm your host, Stephen Earp. For images and reading lists associated with these narratives, visit StephenEarp.com/podcasts. And now, let's get going. Episode 52, Teapot as Teapot. Traveling south on Interstate 91 in Massachusetts, just past Exit 32 for Whately, near the mile marker 32.2, you can see on the right, in between the trees, at the end of a frontage road, an old farmhouse facing parallel to the highway. Originally, this house faced north, perpendicular to the road. It was moved sideways to avoid demolition when I-91 was built. Somebody knew who used to live there and didn't think the place should be razed and its history forgotten. At the beginning of the 19th century, it was the home of Thomas Crafts. Here in 1806, Thomas Crafts began a lead-glazed earthenware teapot manufactory. A manufactory in those days indicated a place where most of the work was done by hand, as opposed to a factory where most of the work was done by machines. This distinction was important for being a separate tax category as well. At their height, Thomas, a younger brother, and a boy employed to wedge clay threw over 2,067 dozen teapots in a year. Think of that, 2,067 dozen teapots. Some were sold locally, but most went to New York and Pennsylvania at $1 a dozen wholesale. That a rural Massachusetts potter in the early 1800s could successfully compete with the deluge of factory-made English Brown Betty teapots was remarkable. But anyone lucky enough to have actually held a Crafts teapot in their hands can understand the feat. His teapots were impeccable. Paper thin, their super glossy jet black glaze needed two firings, unusual for any redware pottery at the time. Sanford Perry, another Whately potter, developed this technique in 1805, basing it on the Jackfield glaze, originally from Shropshire, England. Rumor had it that Crafts stole the Jackfield recipe and then muscled Perry out of town in 1822. The actual record is more honorable and more amiable. Perry voluntarily sold the Caleb to Crafts. They may even have been partners. And then he moved back to Troy, New York, his hometown, to get into the more profitable stoneware business. The Crafts manufactory marked the transition from rural pottery to factory. Thomas certainly saw it that way. He trained several brothers, sons, nephews, and at least one niece, Maria Crafts Kellogg, in the trade. He probably also trained Stephen Orcutt, head of what would become Whately's Orcutt pottery clan. Crafts switched to stoneware when river and canal transportation allowed shipping of Amboy, New Jersey stoneware clay to Whately in 1833. And soon thereafter, he exported his pots and his progeny all over New England. A curious window into the mentality of the Crafts family during that time can be seen in a bizarre, grotesque picture they made at the beginning of their stoneware business in 1833. An ugly face was applied on the front, and United We Stand, Divided We Fall, 1833, was stamped on the back. But a crafts teapot is, for me, the quintessential expression of a classic form. Every element necessary to the pot's function, precisely proportioned, absolutely harmonious. No extraneous decoration. No attempt to be anything but a teapot. Teapot as teapot. Perfection. Thanks for listening, and until next time, remember that philosophically universal principle forever etched onto an early 18th century Devonshire earthenware cooking dish. You and I are Earth.